As the U.S. came out of the Great Depression in the late 30s, there was a boy born in Georgia, a second one in Tennessee, a third one in Ohio, and a fourth one in Pennsylvania. And through the providence of God, these four boys came together. And it's my pleasure to introduce the youngest of these to you tonight, reintroduced because Jan Swenson and Leslie have been here before, and it's my privilege to introduce them to you tonight. Jan Swenson is a retired lawyer, still teaching some, but a retired lawyer. He's on the board of Ohio Valley University. He served as an elder at Holiday Park in Pennsylvania. He has taught in India, and what he saw there is what motivated him to what we're talking about tonight. It's a pleasure to introduce my brother to you tonight. Jan, it's yours.
Thank you, Chuck. What Chuck was talking about, those four people, we all became elders together, the four of us. Chuck and I were fellow elders at the Holiday Park Church of Christ in Pittsburgh. Thank you very much for being here, and thank you very much for inviting me to speak to you. I want to tell you that this church means a lot to me. This church has been so supportive of this work, of the James Connection in India, and we really appreciate it, and we couldn't do it without this kind of support. 18 families of this church have sponsored children at Angel's Place, 18 families sponsoring 22 children. I don't know, could the sponsors please stand up? Could you, all you sponsors? Now, if anybody who is not a sponsor and wants to know about it, here you got people that can tell you all about it. Thank you very much, and thank you very much for your support. The James Connection is the name we gave to it because of the admonition in James 1:27, religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, that you look after orphans and widows in their distress and keep yourself unpolluted from the world. There is so much in the Bible about taking care of people that need to be taken care of. Children and children that are being victimized, that are vulnerable, and widows and poor people throughout the world. All right, let me see if I'm going to do this right. Oh, I went backward. Okay. Our orphanage is in the state of Manipur, which is way over here in the northeastern part of India. And you can see that on the eastern side and the southern side of the state of Manipur, that's an international border with Burma, or now known as Myanmar. This is the state of Manipur, and our orphanage is located down here in Chirachanpur, and we're only 35 miles from this Burma border, and there people walk back and forth across this border all the time. Give you an idea about India. It is about half the size of the lower 48 states of the United States. It's a little farther north and south than the United States, but you can see that it's only about half the size of the lower 48. And it has four times the population. So imagine how crowded that must be with all these people. In India, there are 35 million orphans. There is no shortage of the need for taking care of orphans in India. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the team I started working for back in 2001 when I first went to India to teach, really. I was teaching Bible archaeology. And here is just a little idea about how fertile this field is. You can see that back in 2009, we had 297,000 baptisms, not quite 300,000 in 10. It was up to about the same amount, and we're starting all these new congregations. In 2012, the baptisms were up to 372,000. New congregations, 2,000, a little over 2,000. And now we're doing, for 13, look at what's happening. Baptized almost 500,000. And new congregations, 4,190. Average being baptized a day, 1,228 kids. I've seen a whole churches started in one day. That's sort of, if you go there, you can almost see the work like in Acts when Paul started churches in Asia Minor. Average number of meetings per day. Now, these are all being done by Indian preachers. The Americans only serve as team leaders. And I was working with two American preachers, one from Manassas, Virginia, and the other one from Alabama. And that team of two men supports all these, gets all these Indian preachers organized and raises money for them. In last year, you can see here, meetings conducted, baptism 706,000, and average baptisms per day are now 1,936. And for this year, the average baptisms per day, 2,382 baptisms per day. Look at that. The end of the year, it'll be over 900,000 baptisms. There are more members of the Church of Christ in India than there are in the United States. And there are more congregations of the Church of Christ in India than there are in the United States. Excuse me. In Hyderabad alone, there are 400 congregations. Now, these are, a lot of them are meeting in houses and are maybe 50 members in each. But if you went to Hyderabad and you wanted to be a missionary, you could go to a church every day and you wouldn't get done in a year. This is our orphanage, Angel's Place. And we bought 8.2 acres of a rice paddy. And that's what it looked like when we bought it back in February of 2004. There you can see us looking around, and the story. I don't have enough time to tell you all the miraculous things that happened on this trip. We were able to negotiate the purchase of this price, this piece of land, in 2 hours. It was like we had an angel leading us right to the person that wanted to sell this land and was highly motivated to sell it, and we were the first one to ask for it. This is the foothills of the Himalayas. You can see it's at sunset. This is a very pretty place. It's a sanctuary away from the busy part of the city, and it's a great place for these children. This is the boys' dormitory, and it is four stories. You can see the flights there. The top three floors are almost all dedicated to the boys' dormitory. Our office is right here. The guest room's up here. If you went to visit, you might stay in one of these two guest rooms. And we always invite people to go. The best time to go is in February or March. The weather is nice. It's about 80 every day, and doesn't rain much at that time of the year. This is another shot of the boys' dormitory. You can see we plant mustard seed. Those are mustard plants in the foreground. Here is the construction of the multi-purpose building. You can see the first floor was finished back about a year and a half ago. And then we built on two more floors. And this is the period during construction. And we named this place Lydia's House because this is mostly the girls' dormitory is the major tenant of this building. And I just want to read to you what we put down here. If you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, these are the words of Lydia to Paul. If you've judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come into my house and stay, Acts 16:15. So this is the name of the building. And there it is finished. It is a big building. The bottom floor, here's our infirmary. Here is the girls' dormitory, is here on the first floor and then on the second floor. Over here is the dining hall and the kitchen is in the back. And this back here is the house for the kitchen for the cook and her family. Second floor here is a suite of three rooms and a little kitchenette for visitors and study halls around here. And on the top floor, I don't know why they put them on the top floor, is an auditorium which will seat 500 people. We had 550 people in that auditorium for the dedication of it in March of this year. And it also, when we removed the chairs, can serve as a dormitory or as a gymnasium, because during monsoon season the children have no place to play. It rains constantly, so now they have what is equivalent to a gymnasium for them to play. Here is another view. We first took children into Angel's Place in February 2005, so this year we celebrated our 10th anniversary. And we started out with 60 children, and we have 159 right now. We usually have 160. I don't know why we're down one to 159. But here is the building finished, and this was our 10th anniversary celebration, and the dedication up here you can see is an open floor. You can see right through there, and glass doors on each side. Here is that large auditorium, and here are the two buildings together. Gives you an idea about, here's the large building, which is mostly the girls' dormitory in this part and this part, and over here is the boys' dormitory, and the playing fields. The large field here in the foregrounds is a soccer field. There is a basketball court here. You can see the hoops, so it's a full court basketball court. Indians are not very athletic. I think if you look at the Olympics, you see that they don't win too many medals. But we're trying really hard to get these children a lot of exercise. We send them to a school, which is an English school, and it's a good academic school, but they have no gymnasium or they have no physical education classes. They have no varsity teams. The Indians play English games like soccer and cricket, and I haven't tried to get them to play rugby yet, but they play games that the English started in India. The Indians, probably the best team they have is field hockey. They in Pakistan play a lot of field hockey. Here's the girls' dormitory. You get an idea about how they live. To an American, that looks crowded. To an Indian, that looks beautiful. Every bed has a mosquito net because there are lots of mosquitoes. There are lots of flying insects. So every night they put this mosquito net down, and if you go there, we have mosquito nets for you too. The girls have lockers. You don't see the lockers there. But this particular room is for the younger girls. We have lots of pigs, and I just happened to step in some of their, I was looking at the pigs, and I just happened to step in some. If anybody does any pig farming, you know what I mean. It's taken me 3 months to get the stink out of my shoe. And we butcher these hogs. We're teaching the boys how to butcher. When I go there frequently, they'll have a big to-do and a talent show. The kids love to sing, and they'll teach the boys how to butcher a steer. And they'll feed like 300 people with one steer. And you'll see the steer alive, and then the next day the steer is not there anymore, and they're sawing it up. There's our chicken coop. We used to have cows. We don't have cows anymore. The cows were too expensive to keep, and we just didn't do well with them. We didn't get enough milk. We have three ponds where we have fish, and we put the fish in there. We fill them up when the monsoon season is, and we put fish in, and and we feed the children fish. These children, when they come to us, have never had much protein. They have very little protein, and we try to introduce eggs and meat into their diet gradually. And it's amazing how it improves their complexions in about 6 months. We have pineapples. This is the young son of my partner in India. We have 500 acres of lemongrass. Here we have to cut roads back to the lemongrass fields. We have to chop down trees. You get a good idea of what it's like. This is what Myanmar and Manipur look like. And if you are old as I am and Chuck is, Chuck said I was the youngest. I think I'm younger than him by about 2 months. But if you're as our age, you remember that the Japanese invaded India, and their westernmost advance was right here. There is a monument that the Japanese have erected in Imphal, the capital of Manipur, to show their westernmost advance. And you look at this area, and you wonder how they ever thought that they could possibly defeat anybody after going through all these mountains. But that's why they lost. We have a distillery we take the lemongrass and we put it in this distillery and we extract the oil from it. And we're trying to figure out a ways that the Indians can help support themselves. They have no money. These people, most of them that are parents of our children or their grandparents are living on about a dollar and a quarter a day. So they have no money, and we're trying to teach them how to raise money to help these children through the lemongrass fields. I want to show you about the children. This is the most important part of what we're doing. This little girl's name is Tuam Ne Ching. She came to us, and this is what she looked like. Tuam Ne Ching grew up in a little village that was burned because of ethnic violence. If anybody saw Slumdog Millionaire, that movie pretty well shows you about what the Indians are doing to each other. We don't hear about it much in the United States, but ethnic violence is ever present around here. These are tribal wars that she got into. And her home was burned, and she got away with just her clothes. And she was living with her grandmother, and they were living on a dollar and a quarter a day, and she couldn't go to school. They'd go out into the jungles and cut wood and sell it at the marketplace. She came to us, and in a couple of years, she took some classes on martial arts, and she won the state championship in martial arts. She's a really good athlete. Here she is. 2 years ago, she was named the outstanding girl track star in the state of Manipur, and here she is with all of her trophies. This girl there she is with my wife, Leslie. That was a year ago in March of 2014. This girl is a real sweetheart. She is, if we have a poster child, she's it. She is so modest and sweet, and she's very responsible. She is what we call a team leader. She has 12 little girls that she leads and makes sure that they behave themselves in the dining hall and that sort of thing. And she is finishing 12th grade this year, and she wants to go into the Army because if she goes in the Army, they'll help educate her because she wants to go to college. She has said in the past she wants to be a physician. I don't know if that's going to be realized, but she's been with us 10 years, and she has turned out really, really well. Came to us looking emaciated and undernourished, and now look at her. Here's another boy. This boy is from a Hindu family. His name is Suresh Singh. If you hear the name Singh, you know that that is a Sikh name. They say Sikh here because they don't want to sound like S-I-C-K. But in India, they say Sikh. But he is a Hindu, and his parents died, and he came to us 10 years ago. And Suresh is another star. This is what he looks like last year. And Suresh is an athlete, and he's going to be, he's a leader. He's smart and good looking, and he's got everything that a kid could have in India. There he is, excuse me. There he is leading. He is also a team leader, and there he is during prayers before dinner. Here he is doing something acrobatic, sort of walking on the walls, but he does flips and cartwheels, and he's a very athletic kid. He plays soccer as well. This little girl's name is Ravina. She came to us 10 years ago. This is what she looked like. Then a couple years later, this is what she looked like in a group of kids that were becoming singers. She loves to sing and has a beautiful voice. If you go to India and you don't go to Manipur, you will not hear good singing. If you go to Hyderabad, I don't know why they can't sing, but they can't. So if you go there and you sit in the congregation, they'll sing in church, but they sort of screech. The kids in Manipur are great singers. As a matter of fact, we've taken a music teacher from Montreal 2 years now, and she says they're so good that she wants to take them on tour in the United States. And if we do that, we will certainly come here because of all your interests. We want to show you what these kids look like. But she's our star female singer, and she teaches all the other kids how to sing. Here she is now, and there she is. She likes Justin Bieber. And there she is singing at our 10th anniversary celebration this past March. And here she formed a trio. And these kids, I gave them a hymnal. And our hymnals that I got a hymnal from a church in Jupiter, Florida, and took it there. And the hymnal's just like the ones in your that you're using. And I gave it to her, and I said, they've never seen notes, incidentally. They arrange songs just from seeing CDs. They've never seen. When I asked them, where's your sheet music? They didn't know what I meant. They have never seen a horn. They've never seen a French horn or a clarinet or a flute. They have never seen a piano or an organ. They have never seen anything. I took an electric keyboard for them to show them this is what a piano is like. They've seen them in movies, but they've never seen one in real life. And so these kids love music, and they learn music just from seeing videos. If any of you have seen the singing, some of you have seen the day in the life videos that we have, those kids learned all that simply from hearing it. And they know the harmony. And these three girls, there's Ravina, and this girl is, I've forgotten her name, it's very complicated. Over here, this girl's name is Rejoice. And these kids, when they become Christians, quite often will take on biblical names. But she wants to be called Rejoice. They're all three have become Christians. About 100 of our kids have been baptized. So 250 children have gone through Angel's Place, and 100 or more of them have become Christians. Here they are, the 60 that we took in. Back 10 and a half years ago, and they look scared and they look confused. Look at this little girl. Can you pronounce her name? The last syllable is Loon. And Leslie, my wife, called her the peanut because I don't know why she called her the peanut. But look at how glum she looks. There she is. There she is 2 years ago. There she is last year. She's not a peanut anymore. She's turned into a lovely young lady. These kids look a little Oriental because they're descended from people that came through there, like the Mongolians, Genghis Khan's people. And so they have a lot of Mongolian heritage there. And the Indians in Delhi think that this is ugly. They don't think, these children do not look like Indians to them, and therefore they consider them as outcasts. India is very caste conscious, very, very racist, very racist, very caste conscious, and they don't necessarily like to look like this. Here's another one. Her name is Kim, another little scared kid in that group. Kim grew up, and now she's a real sweetheart. And there she is with Tuam Nay Ching and Rejoice. Excuse me, here's Tuam Nay Ching and Rejoice, and here's Kim. And they're dressed in their tribal colors. This is the colors for the Paiute tribe. They give me a tie almost every year. But this is their tribal colors. And here, this little girl right here is Tinne Moy. Moy means beautiful, so a lot of the girls have Moy in their names. And Moy came to us. Her parents were both dead. She was our number one. She was the neediest child that came to us. 186 children tried to get in the first year. We took them by need. She was the number one of need. And here she was a year later with a big smile. She had such a big smile. We had Christmas cards and we put her. She was our poster child on the Christmas card campaign. We didn't raise too much money with it, but it was fun. There she is now. This was 2 years ago. Here she is this year. And she's become a real sweetheart, too. Moy is one of the children that did not excel in school. She only got through 10th grade. And in India, you have to take an exam to go on beyond 10th grade. And the public schools only go to 10th grade. So you take an exam, and about 50% pass it. And then you have to go to what is equivalent to our community college. So our kids that pass this, and usually about 80% of our kids pass, we tutor them to pass it, they go to a local college called Rayburn College. Moy did not pass. She tried to, took it twice. She decided that academics was not for her, and she has graduated. She's 19 now, and she has left Angel's Place, and we've taught her how to sew and how to cook and how to do various things. And she speaks English very well, so she is a very employable girl, and so she's one of our graduates. We hate to see them go by, but then they graduate and leave us when she's 19, and so she's ready to become a young adult. Here is Coop El Song. Coop's parents died. He was living with his grandmother, who was disabled. His grandmother could barely move. And she had to be helped by his aunt. And Coop was a child that we sponsored. And Coop did graduate all the way through 12th grade. He passed the state exam, went on through 12th grade. And he was in junior ROTC, the young cadets. And he wants to go into the Army. Here's Coop this past year. He's grown into a fine young man, and he's still on Facebook. He's one of the kids that we still communicate. He calls Leslie his mom. Hi, Mom, he says, and he writes to her all the time. This girl, here's Chin Lian Ching. Chin Lian Ching came to us 2 years ago, and she could not hardly walk. She staggered. And I immediately, when I got there, I said, she had just come to us about 2 days before I got there in February of 14. And I called the doctor because she was apparently ill. And he examined her and he says, it's simply malnutrition. She is malnourished. And so we got her some eggs and here she was 2 days later. She couldn't get out of bed in that last picture. And here she is 2 days later in her school uniform, getting ready to go to school. You can see her legs are like pencils and she's emaciated. Here she was last year, 2014. This is 1 year later, and look at her now with Leslie, and she's just a regular girl now. She's up and around and active, and there she is this year. These are our kids, little boys, they're doing a dance thing. I don't know what they did with this child here. He's obviously out of step and going the wrong direction. And if anybody who has ever gone the wrong direction and in the dance floor or on a football field or something like that, you know how he must have felt and how the other kids feel about him. And here they do a lot of acrobatic things. They like to show off. They're doing circus tricks and things like that. Here are the little kids at school in their school uniforms. This little girl is so cute. I can't stop taking pictures of her. She is such a pretty little girl. And I call her Moi Moi because she's, and they are, everybody else calls her Moi Moi because she's so pretty. And there she is, Nyong Gai Moi. M-A-W-I is pronounced Moi. And she's always beaming. There she is. We have four singing groups. Here she is here in the singing group, and that's her friends. That's the junior singing group. We have an intermediate singing group, a senior group, and then a chamber group, which the chamber group is 20 kids of the best singers of all. Here's what does the James Connection provide for each child. You can look through that list and food and clothing and shelter. These children we're not guardians for the children. We have to have the guardian's permission to have custody of them. We're in a parental relationship to them, and we take responsibility to make sure that they are healthy and that they go to school and that they're nurtured. If you go there, you would look at that and say it's kind of Spartan to you because it's 159 children, and we don't have many orphanages in the United States anymore. I live in Pennsylvania. We have no orphanages in Pennsylvania. Everybody is either, all the children that are homeless live with foster parents. So in India, because there are 35 million orphans, that's like the whole population of Poland, I think, is 35 million. There are 35 million orphans, and there just aren't enough people to take them into their homes. There are people that come to us and see what we're doing and ask us to build orphanages in their place. We see people that have taken in 16 children in a house of four rooms. These are Christian people trying to help these children. In four rooms, you can imagine 16 children. The man that was doing that, the man and woman who were doing that, I asked them, how do you arrange that? And they said, well, they sleep on the floors. And what do you do in the morning? Who gets in the bathroom? Well, the girls get the bathroom and the boys go outside. And that's how they live. You can imagine what it's like, what the line would be at the bathroom door and before school in the morning. So this is how these children are living. When they come to Angel's Place, they feel like your 15-year-old would feel like if you got a scholarship to Exeter or Choate or one of the prestigious prep schools in the United States. They get to go to an English school, which is a Christian. Everybody on the staff is Christian. Everybody, all the teachers are Christian. And they get to go someplace where people are really nice to them. They get fed. They get mountains of food. They eat a lot of rice. And these kids eat, when they get a plate of rice, it's this high. And they eat it all. So they get fed well. They get clothed. They get loved. And they get nurtured. Now, it's not, if sociologists and psychologists will tell you that the best way for children to be raised is by two parents who stay together and nurture them. And the second best is by one parent, and the third best is by foster parents, and the fourth best is orphanages. So in India, we don't have enough parents. And why do we have so many orphans in India is because the healthcare is pathetic. In this part of the world, the healthcare is very primitive. And AIDS is epidemic, and drugs are epidemic. And because of that, because AIDS is epidemic and they share needles, it is spread, and we've had three children die at Angel's Place. I'm convinced that all three died because of AIDS. If you talk to the physician and say, why did this child die? Because of, say, leukemia. We had one child diagnosed with leukemia. I said, why did he die within 1 year? Well, if it may say leukemia, but it was AIDS. We had a little girl die within 2 months after we opened the place, and I absolutely know that it was AIDS. So, and we had one little boy die that had a lesion that simply we treated and treated, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and that's obviously a sign of AIDS. That HIV, his body just simply was not able to handle any kind of a disease, and it just eventually killed him. So the need is just overwhelming. I can't even begin to tell you all the things we hear about. Just last 10 days ago, we went to a meeting where two people described opening a house. Two Indians came to the United States and described opening a house to take in temple prostitutes. Little girls, 12, 13, 14 years old, being taken into a Hindu temple to be prostitutes for a goddess that they were worshiping. And there are 250,000 of these little girls. And I left that and I said to my wife, there's more trouble in that country than you can shake a stick at. It's just one thing after another. And here we've got 160 kids and 250 that we've had come our way that have had these various things, education, on-site occupational skill training. We've tried to teach them how to sew and how to be mechanics with cars and that sort of thing. We don't violate child labor laws. We don't exploit them in the fields, but we do teach them how to do some farming, how to do some mechanical work, how to work in the kitchen, how to cook, how to sew, those kinds of things. And we teach them English, which is very important in India if you want to become employable. We have Bible classes a lot. We have a lot of devotionals almost every day. We have a physician come in every week to examine the kids. We have a good Christian environment. Everybody on the staff is a Christian. And the kids know that they're loved. The children are from 15 different tribes. And they're not all tribal. Some of them are Hindus. We don't have any Muslim children there. The Muslims really won't have anything to do with Christians. So I've got up there, 97 cents of every dollar donated goes to India to support the Children of Angels Place. I'm really, really proud of that. I know pride goeth before a fall, but that's something that I tell people. If you give us a dollar, 96 cents or more of it is going to go to India. We don't have anybody in the United States that gets paid anything. The only people that we have that is paid are our staff people, our superintendents, and our house mothers, and the staff people that live there. And we have a staff of 15, and everybody else is a volunteer. We have 300 sponsors from over the United States. Our sponsors, some of them have more than one child, so sometimes we have 320 sponsorships. We have anybody who wants to be a sponsor. We've got, I believe, 19 vacancies. 19, how many? 19. We just had a meeting last week at which we said, okay, we're going to try and recruit sponsors. How many do we need? We need 19. People from all over the United States just pay $35 a month. Some give us more than $35 a month, but we ask for $35 a month. We were talking about saying maybe we should make it 40, but we're holding at 35. It costs us about $90 a month to take care of these children. So if we have two sponsors per child, that's $70 or more. So we have to raise money otherwise for other operational expense. So we do that. And our annual operational budget is about $175,000. That's amazing, isn't it? Think about feeding and clothing and sending 159 kids to school, how much it would cost in the United States. Those two buildings we built for about $1 million. And in the United States, they probably would have cost $4 million. And we have raised about $2.8 million. When I added that up in May of this year, and I saw that we had raised over $2.7 million, that's a miracle. Because we didn't have a dime, we didn't have anybody. We were talking about where are we going to get $10,000 to open an account in the Pittsburgh Foundation, where we could open an account and have the money invested in the pool, in the foundation pool. And we had to have $10,000, and we were trying to figure out where are we going to get the $10,000. And none of us has ever run an orphanage before. We just did it. And God blessed it, and I've been privileged to see miracles in this work. So we have 1,098 current active contacts in 36 different states, and we have a lot in Tennessee. And next time I go, I'm going to get all the children that this church sponsors. The 18 children that you sponsor, or 22 children that this church sponsors, and maybe 30 by then, who knows. And all this, I'm going to take a group picture of all your kids that you sponsor, and I'm going to send you a whole bunch of pictures, and you can put them on the bulletin board or wherever you would be interested in displaying them. But when I go there in February or March, I'll take that picture and send it to you, because I think you'll really like to see it. The kids look great. And you see there, we've received 828,000 in sponsored gifts. That's other than the capital campaigns, and over 2.7 million in total gifts in 11 years. Here's some of the things we need. We're working right now on getting solar panels. Right now in Manipur, the state is under martial law, and the Hindu-controlled legislature has passed laws which restrict the tribal areas' real property rights. The people in the tribal areas burned down houses of the members of legislature. In response, the police shot and killed 9 men. And these violence. Now, the demonstrations are all women. The men don't demonstrate anymore because they'll shoot them. So the women demonstrate, and the police won't shoot women. So you'll see these 50,000 women marching in the streets of Chirachanpur, which is where the orphanage is. And the power goes out every day. So we're trying to make ourselves independent and to get big solar panels for our two big buildings and the batteries to go with it to store the electricity. We've got an estimate of $55,000. So that's what we want to raise right now. Our track record's pretty good. I'm predicting that we're going to raise it. We have a monthly expense for tutors because of our schools are closed. They close the schools. They close everything, the banks, the stores, everything. Because of that, it's been very difficult to get money for food and get food. And now they've allowed our kids to go to school until noon. They have to be back on the campus of the orphanage by noon. And from noon till 5 o'clock, 5 a.m. the next morning, there's a curfew. Everybody has to be in. Nobody on the streets, no demonstrations, no schools open, no stores, no banks, no nothing. Martial law. We need computers for the administrators. I put $5,000 there. They're more expensive in India. And if you buy them here and take them there, they'll tax you like 100%. It's really unreal how difficult it is to get electronic equipment in there without paying a heavy tax. And what do we need? We need more children, more sponsors for children. We need money to help in this crisis. I don't know how long the crisis is going to last. Thursday night, I talked to my partner over there, and he says it's unchanged, at least now. They're not killing anybody and they're not burning anything down. That's a long, complicated story. It'd take me an hour just to explain it. We need money to pay for the tutors because we've taken in two tutors to teach the kids that are in 10th grade so they can graduate from our normal school, and then another tutor to teach the kids that are in 12th grade so that they can graduate from Rayburn College and get their certificate. And we need the money for the solar panels. How can anybody help? Well, we got a really good website going now, and it's just been updated, and a lot of work has gone into it. So it's very simple, jamesconnection.org. And if you look at that, you'll see a whole lot of stories about kids. I just want to tell you what one kid told me. I try to interview these children and get to know them personally. And they all speak English now because they've been there. The older ones have all been there long enough to speak English. And I asked one child, and I said, how do you feel about it? He says, I want to thank you so much for letting me come here, because if I wasn't here, I would be a homeless beggar. And he said it in a way that was not at all emotional. It was just simple matter of fact. That was my life if I had not been here. We have a waiting list of 1,000, more than 1,000. If we said that we had an opening, we'd have a waiting list of probably 1,500. So the need here is endless. And we got this. Americans have the ability to do some wonderful things. And then the Indians have very little ability to help themselves. So you can tell your friends about it. We're in 36 states. You could give us your email address, and I send emails out to a lot of the members of your church, telling them about the daily events there, and there's a lot of things going on. And you could go to Facebook and you can like us there. So that is our story. Are there any questions? Yes, ma'am. The kids are safe. They are removed. The violence is not very far away. Within a mile or 1 to 3 miles away is where the demonstrations and the violence is occurring. But the kids are safe on the campus. There is martial law there, and the army is very close to our campus, so we're safe there. Anybody else? Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Uh-huh. You get letters from your kids and they tell you what they're doing and what they're interested in.
Yeah, if you're a sponsor.
It's a lot of fun.
If you're a sponsor, we'll give you a picture, we'll give you a biography, we'll tell you all about this child, they'll write to you twice a year, they'll write to you, and the kids are doing pretty well writing, aren't they? Yeah. Anybody else? Well, we can't end a sermon without an invitation, and if we invite these children to become Christians all the time. We don't compel them. They don't have to become Christians. We take anybody in, whether they're Hindus or we take some animists in, people that were worshiping medicine men, believe it or not. When they hear about Christ, It changes their lives, and we have a baptistry. They said they wanted to put a swimming pool in. I said, no swimming pool. But they built one anyway. I said, no, don't build a swimming pool. They built one anyway. Well, what they use it for is a baptistry and to wash their clothes. So every month or so, we get a picture of somebody being baptized in the baptistry in the swimming pool. But you have a better baptistry here, so. If anyone would like to become a Christian or has a something that they would like to present to the congregation, would you please do so as we stand and sing the invitation song?